everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined, as always, on the Retro Experience for Raw by Sondra. Sondra Ruth Wesseldyke Reinstein. Hi, Sondra.
Hello.
So, Canadian Stampede has been and gone, and now it's time to talk about Raw.
Yeah, it is time to talk about Raw leading into SummerSlam. Now we're kind of like starting that SummerSlam build, which is going to be exciting. I mean, I know it's kind of an important show. We're just kind of moving on and going forward with things, I suppose. I guess.
This is episode 217 on the network if you are watching along with us. This was the night after Canadian Stampede from Edmonton, Alberta, where we experienced the fallout from the Canadian Stampede. The last 2 hour in your house.
Oh, it is the last 2 hour in your house, isn't it? That's unfortunate. That makes me like Canadian Stampede even more.
So we opened the show in Canada with Vince McMahon introducing Bret the Hitman Hart. He's coming out in an Edmonton Oilers jersey because he's a big panderer.
Nothing wrong with a cheap pop. Also, I liked the intro video package before this episode where Vince McMahon goes, "Last night at In Your House Canadian Stampede, we witnessed a stunning display of blind patriotism." Like,
we did?
You mean everything you want to see from American fans for, like, every story you're doing on SmackDown currently, Vince McMahon? Is that what we saw?
Pretty much. So Vince comes out, so Bret comes out in his jersey, thanks Canada for still letting him be their hero. He talks about America and not liking it and love it or leave it. Talks about this is the kind of famous clip where, you know, Bret's like, you know, "We're still a country who takes care of our old, and we have gun control and limiting violence." And I mean, Bret Hart is just speaking all these truths. Like, mm-hmm. So many truths.
It's crazy how relevant this still seems today, right? Like, we have universal health care. We take care of people. We don't, you know, shoot people every day in the streets. We're not filled with racial prejudice and hatred and all this stuff. And it's like, those seem like relevant criticisms 20 years later as well, Bret Hart. And really all Bret Hart did in this promo was just make me want to move 2 hours away to Canada.
Yeah, Bret Hart was very, very pro-Canada, and...
Well, he even says he's not anti-American. He's just very, very pro-Canadian.
He tells his fans in Canada that he hopes that he lives up to being a hero for them. He's going to become the WWF champion for a fifth time. He's going to face The Undertaker at SummerSlam for the WWF championship, Sondra.
He keeps saying "in the SummerSlam." Did you notice that?
Yeah, I like how Bret Hart speaks.
I think
it's always
funny.
Weird.
I like it too. But, you know, he says that in the SummerSlam, he surely won't let the Canadian fans down. And then later on, when he calls out Owen Hart, he says that Owen will destroy Stone Cold Steve Austin in the SummerSlam. I mean, he had no idea how right he was. But...
Oh, God.
I'm just saying, it was like, oh, yeah.
Jesus. So, yeah, but he then says that if he doesn't win the WWF Championship SummerSlam, he promises to never wrestle in America again.
Oh, boy, I wonder if he will win.
Which would mean a whole lot of Raws in Canada.
Yes, it would.
He then brings out the best technical wrestler in the WWF, the Slammy Award-winning Intercontinental Champion, Owen Hart. Owen talks about how he's going to destroy Stone Cold at SummerSlam. Then he brings Bulldog out. Bulldog says that he's going to fight Ken Shamrock at SummerSlam. He's going to kill him.
I am here for that match, by the way. I'm excited for Ken Shamrock versus the British Bulldog.
Wait till you fucking see the stipulation on that. So, Bret, Owen, and Bulldog are standing there, and then they put the Canadian National Anthem on the big screen with a Canada flag and the Titantron, and midway through, Steve Austin comes out of nowhere and just whacks them all with a chair and runs off laughing at what he's done.
He's such a dick, and I love him.
Vince McMahon makes a serious apology on behalf of the World Wrestling Federation for Steve Austin interrupting something as sacred as the playing of a national anthem. They show you a clip from the break where Bret gets on the microphone and tells the crowd that Steve Austin can walk all over him and his family, but they will not walk all over Canada. And what did you think of this opening segment with the Hart Foundation and Bret Hart and Steve Austin hitting people with chairs and Vince McMahon apologizing?
I think it was really good. I think Bret Hart has a tendency to go on, and maybe that's why he had to cut this promo during the break or something, because I don't know, timing wise, it was kind of strange. It did kind of scream of like, we need to fill this episode with something, given that Owen and Bulldog each get their individual entrances, and it takes a while. Like, I don't remember how long it was until this interview segment was done, but it just kind of seemed like they were filling time. But it worked for me. I thought it was fun. And I mean, Bret Hart's not lying when he's talking about all the good things about Canada. So at least to me, I'm just like,
I love
that. You seem pretty babyface right now. It's really hard for me, even though I'm American, to be booing, like, taking care of people and whatnot.
I think one of the coolest things about these shows is that, you know, this whole, like, one week we're in America, the next week we're in Canada. Like, I think it adds a lot of cool elements to the shows with the fans. So I thought the promo, it was good that the night after Canadian Stampede, he got to be in front of a Canadian crowd cutting this promo.
Yeah, I did like that too. And it was cool. Like, I like seeing them get such a good reaction, right? And it makes Steve Austin seem super dastardly. I mean, later in the show, they're talking about, you know, it's going to be different. Next week, we're in San Antonio, Texas. And I'm sure that it will be. So I think the dynamic of the crowd is very interesting to watch.
Yeah, 100%. It's really good. It's funny because the one thing I was kind of scared about going back and watching Retro Raw was how the Bret Hart and Hart Foundation stuff would play out. And as I watched it, I was kind of go, it is as good as it was then. Like, I think it holds up. Yeah, I think it really holds up. I think Bret Hart, like, there was some times where, like, I would kind of be like, you know, can I say this? Because I've not watched it back in a while, but, like, I genuinely think that with all kind of, like, conviction, I can say Bret Hart was a killer promo in 1997. Like, he really was. Like,
yeah,
you can tell, like you were saying, like, he's not completely crisp at it, because sometimes he does just ramble a little bit, but for whatever reason, it just seems to work for him. So,
well, and it seems very authentic. Everything he's doing seems authentic and seems to be coming from a place of realism within Bret Hart. And I think that's the most effective promo, right? Is when you feel like the performers believe what they're saying. So I think that really helps him out.
And Steve Austin being a dick hitting him with chairs was just great. And then him just cackling away.
Yeah, so he was so proud of himself. So proud
and
of himself.
And Vince just, like, so apologetic about it. Because, like, I can imagine they'd be like, we fucking interrupted our national anthem here. We better make sure we're okay.
It makes sense, though, that Vince McMahon, especially, like, being the voice of the company and, you know, the owner of the company, I kind of like that he did apologize, because otherwise that just makes America seem like, you know, all Americans actually are assholes. And, I mean, a fair number of them are. But, like, it makes sense that Vince McMahon wouldn't condone interrupting a national anthem. He would still have respect for a national anthem, even if it's not his. Lawler, of course, is like, Canadians are stupid.
That's what you get with Jerry Lawler. We get a rematch from Canadian Stampede with the great Sasuke against Taka Michinoku. It basically was like half the length of the night before. It was like a condensed version of what they did the night before. With the same finish of the Thunder Fire. Well, no, it was, this was the Powerbomb, this one that he beat him with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was still good. We had Brian Christopher in commentary, which, you know, having two members of the Lawler family in commentary is difficult.
The cackling and the giggling is out of control. Like, I feel like Brian Christopher's giggling is even worse than Jerry Lawler's. It's like he's taken it up a pitch.
One of my favorite things is your utter dismay for the entire Lawler family.
I loathe them. I loathe them so much. He existed on my television screen and cackled like his father.
So, yeah, basically we got a good match with Sasuke and Michinoku. Did you enjoy it? It's all right.
It was good. It seemed sloppier than the one at Canadian Stampede. I don't know if they were rushed for time.
Like, I felt like they were rushed. To me, it felt like they were rushed. It was kind of like, right, go and do like a 5-minute version of what you did last night. It's like, whoa, how the fuck did we do that?
Yeah, because it seemed like they were just like, they were running around and kind of throwing everything at the wall, and it wasn't like it was bad or anything, but they were just sometimes like Taka Michinoku slipped off the ropes, or like some kicks weren't timed properly, and just that.
Sandra, don't worry though, because I know that, you know, that match maybe wasn't as good as you wanted it to be.
I mean, it was fine.
But don't you worry yourself, because up next, what's that noise for? Up next, we have a video package that shows us the origin of gang warfare in the World Wrestling Federation. We have Savio Vega and his Boricuas coming out to a nice little bit of music, I think you'll agree. And they come
generic
out
generic tune number 7.
Because we're going to get Savio Vega versus Crush.
My dream.
With the Disciples of Apocalypse and the Barriquas on the outside. Now, I do not remember, and if you had quizzed me on this, I would never have been able to remember it, that for some reason, Edmonton fucking loved DOA.
Yeah, they did. I was, like, one of the things about faction warfare, which is what Vince McMahon calls it at one point, he says, it could be faction warfare. He doesn't use the term gang warfare. He uses the term faction warfare. But
what's the gang?
One of the things that I'm still unclear about in this whole gang warfare situation is who I'm supposed to cheer, because I think they're all heels.
Well, who if you had to pick, just right now, Savio Vega versus Crush, you have to put your backing behind one of them. Who do you find less deplorable?
Crush does have a motorcycle.
Andy has twins.
Yes. So I think, and maybe I'm just being swayed by the Edmonton, Alberta crowd, but I think I'm more into DOA than I am into Los Barriquas. Because seriously, Los Barriquas, what even is a Barriqua? I like the motorcycles, so I think I'm more into DOA, but Edmonton just loved them for some reason, and I don't really understand why, because...
And the match goes about 2 minutes, and it ends up getting a DQ because they all fight each other, because it's gang warfare.
Because Savio's on the outside, and DOA just decides to attack him.
And then they all just start fighting, and people are going mental for DOA.
They love this.
It kind of made me like DOA more, just because they were going so mental for them.
Yeah, don't I was really like, oh, why. Apparently there's something to like about DOA, so I guess why not? Like, they have motorcycles, sure. So that's fun. But it just kind of seems like, you know, coming out of the Nation of Domination, Savio Vega and Crush were super ineffective in the Nation of Domination. So I don't know that these are two that I would trust to lead their own factions. I just don't think it's going to go all that well. And they're just not that fascinating. I'm glad that the Edmonton crowd enjoyed it, but Savio Vega versus Crush was not exactly my dream match. And
I mean, I think you need to reevaluate yourself, Sandra.
Maybe I do. Maybe I need to adjust my expectations.
So we then go from there to an interview with Paul Bearer, who's backstage. Vince McMahon's asking Paul Bearer, does he want to apologize last week about The Undertaker? Paul Bearer says, no way. He's like, I'm not the murderer.
He's like, I'm not the one who did the killing. You know, The Undertaker's the one who did the
killing.
And Vince
is like, why should we believe you? And he's like, because Kane told me. He's alive. Face so disfigured.
He's like, oh, your Undertaker told you that the story was true. Talking about poor little Kane. He's so disfigured. You wouldn't believe his charred body parts. Emotionally.
And then he just screams murderer again.
Mm-hmm.
Just exactly. I mean, because we get this show without Undertaker. So I guess this Paul Bearer segment is just kind of to keep it going. Which is fine.
Why isn't Undertaker on this show?
I don't know.
Just not.
I mean, it kind of shows you that the depth of the roster is pretty good, that you can not have the WWF champion on it and still have a good roster.
Yeah. I mean, you say a good roster. We got Savio Vega versus Crush.
Mate, it was exciting. That brawl was pretty good. You got to admit.
The brawl was pretty good. I will give it that. And a Barriqua got annihilated on a motorcycle, so.
And it didn't last too long.
Yes, and that is positive. But the whole Paul Bearer Kane thing, it's very weird listening to all of this, knowing what Kane looks like. And even knowing what Kane looks like when he debuts, because he's talking about, like, poor little Kane, you know, the little brother and blah, blah, blah. So you're picturing this, like, just this wee boy who is burned and charred and so, so sad. And you're not picturing this big hulking monster that we know that Kane is, right? So it'll be interesting for me to hear how Paul Bearer continues the story of Kane before he actually debuts, because I don't remember how long it is until he actually debuts. So...
Don't tell it on Twitter, people.
Don't tell me on Twitter. I think I know which pay-per-view it is, but I don't remember when that is.
Anyway, let's move on. So, up next is the Tag Team Championship Finals. The winners will face Stone Cold Steve Austin and a partner next week on Raw in San Antonio, Texas. Owen Hart and the Bulldog against Farouk and D'Lo Brown. I forgot for a second that we were in Canada, and then Owen and Bulldog came in. I was like, fucking hell, the ovation that they're getting is insane. And in the end, they all start fighting. The Hart Foundation come out and help and start fighting the Nation, and Owen just like gets back in the ring at like the count of eight, and Owen and Bulldog win by count out.
Which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, because they're all brawling on the outside, and, like, they're all... I don't know. The whole brawl is happening in direct view of the referee.
Let me tell you why. Here's why. I can tell you why Owen got away with it.
Okay.
There are four members of the Hart Foundation out there. Owen, Bulldog, Neidhart, Pillman. There are three members of the Nation of Domination. Farouk, D'Lo, Kama. Farouk, D'Lo, and Kama were dealing with Bulldog, Neidhart, and Pillman. They were all distracted. Who's the spare man? Owen Hart. He's the legal man. Gets back in. Wins the match. Clever guy.
No, that's not my issue. My issue is that this entire brawl, including members of the match, is happening on the outside of the ring. The referee sees that this brawl is happening on the outside of the ring, where not members of the match are attacking members of the match, does not disqualify anyone.
This is 1997 WWF. You should be used to this by now.
I am used to it, but it's still so infuriating, because if you can have a count out, you can have a disqualification.
I mean, we did just see a pay-per-view where Roman Reigns tried to murder someone.
True. That's a pretty glorious double turn, in my opinion, but...
God, I hope so. I really hope so. Mankind comes out wearing his Austin 316 t-shirt, threatens the Hart Foundation.
I do love that. Mankind is so adorable. And also, I like Steve Austin's promo before this match, where he's like, I don't care who my partner is or who they'll face, you know, Mankind's a freak and that's the bottom line, and I like that he told Vince to shut up.
So that takes us into hour two. It's time to go to the war zone, Sandra. War zone.
Which is strangely very similar to Raw is War.
You mean WWF Raw?
WWF Raw, sure.
We're confusing them. Because WWF Raw is our one, War Zone is our two. Combined, they are Raw is War.
They are Raw is War. See, it's not all that clear. I need a diagram.
So Steve Austin versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley is the opening match of hour two. It goes on for a little bit. China, as always, gets fucking involved. She puts a chair in the ring. She trips up Steve Austin. But then Mankind comes out and sort of ends up taking the chair shot from Hunter. It's a chair shot to the head, which is uncomfortable.
It's very brutal looking.
But then Hunter turns around and Austin gives him a stunner, gets the win. And just when Austin's about to sort of like, so Austin's basically teasing that he's going to let Mankind be his partner. Austin like puts his hand out to shake it. Mankind wants a hug. I think that's sign number one that he's an idiot. Austin gives him a hug. What did you think when Austin gave him a hug? Did you know it was coming?
Oh, I knew it was coming.
Okay, good.
I mean, I expected it to be when Austin put out his hand and said, you know, oh, what does he actually say to him? He says, I don't like you one bit, but I'll damn sure go to war with you if that's what you want. You know, all you have to do is shake my hand and we're a tag team. I expected Mankind to shake his hand and then Austin to pull him in, kick him, and give him a stunner, is what I was expecting. I didn't expect the hug. That was adorable. But obviously Austin's going to stunner him afterwards, because that's what Austin does.
DTA, and, you stupid long-haired freak.
Yeah, don't ever trust anybody. You ain't never going to be my partner ever, because you're a long-haired freak and you suck. Aw, poor Mankind.
But then Mankind gets on the microphone and he says, you know, I was just looking for a friend, but you've lost that chance. Next week I'm going to have to take drastic measures. I'm going to have to do something I never thought I'd do again. And the WWF will never be the same. So Mankind's got plans.
Mankind does have plans. I think I know who Steve Austin's partner is, but I'm not 100% sure.
But I thought this was good. Good storytelling. Good, yeah, I mean, I get it's just there's layers to stuff. And layers are good.
Layers like, are good. It makes it a lot more interesting. I mean, Hunter Hearst Helmsley wasn't that interesting here. Although I guess you do have the tie of Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mankind also having issues. So that thread is kind
of... But that's the thing, right? Because... if you have, like, if Roman Reigns comes out on Raw right now, like, you pretty much know it's going to be Braun Strowman that he's going to be talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when Steve Austin comes out, is it going to be Hunter, his opponent? Is it going to be Mankind, the guy who wants to partner with him? Is it going to be Bulldog and Owen? There's all these different people it could be.
Is it going to be Brett, who he just still wants to beat up all the time?
Exactly. So there's lots going on. But don't worry, Sandra, fear not, because the WWF wants to give you not just one, but two light heavyweight division contests on Monday Night Raw.
I would have been okay with just the one, to be honest.
Sunny comes out as the special ring announcer, cracking pair of tits.
Crackin'. Oh, yeah. Her tits look amazing. Her hair and makeup, though, not doing her any favors this week.
Although, I think if you showed her 2017 Sunny Skype, she'd be very happy with how she looks here.
Oh, I'm sure she would. I'm just saying, I think she's looked better in recent weeks.
My favorite thing though is that Sunny says, representing all of Canada,
the entire nation of Canada,
Eric Shelley, against Brian Christopher, Sandra's favorite.
Why is there so much Brian Christopher on this show? Like, he had to be on commentary earlier, and now I have to see him in a match.
Because they're trying to set him up as the big heel of the light heavyweight division. It's very straightforward, sir. So anyway, Jerry Lawler on commentary is obviously still making fun of Scott Putski, who they beat up the other week and all that. In the end, to the surprise of no one, Brian Christopher gets the victory over Eric Shelley, and then afterwards, Jerry Lawler gets in, and they just both put the boots to Shelley. Now, my thing is, if you don't want people to think that Brian Christopher's your son, maybe don't have a direct relationship and help him.
That's what's so baffling about this. Like, I don't understand why the story is Jerry Lawler still refusing to believe or refusing to admit that it's his son when he's very clearly helping Brian Christopher. And he's just like, no, I never said he was my son, but I'm helping him out and I'm his mentor and blah, blah, blah. Like, he's obviously your son, but why is this even a thing? Why are we... It's just such a waste of time. I just don't care. Like, he's your son. No one cares. It's not a big deal. You're a deplorable human and just get over yourself.
Vince McMahon is bringing Steve Austin back out again to the show because we need more Steve Austin at a Canada show.
This confused me because we've cut backstage to Steve Austin twice for promos, right? Like once before the tag match final, and then we cut to Steve Austin promo right before his match with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And so now he needs to come out and do an interview.
Steve Austin is doing three different things in this show. He's promoting a match with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, he's promoting his tag team title defense next week, and now he wants the Intercontinental Championship as well. Three different things. Steve Austin, the best.
I love that. I absolutely love it. It seems strange that it's so segmented, I guess. The pacing of this show was just kind of strange, I think. I mean, you were talking about, you know, it's great that we have such a deep roster if we don't need The Undertaker, but is the roster super deep if we're showing Steve Austin this much? I'm not complaining about it, but it just seems like it's a lot of Austin.
You know what we need? We need Sid. That's what we need.
We do need Sid. We absolutely need Sid.
Anyway, Vince brings out Austin. We talk about next week they'll be in San Antonio. They do say in commentary at one point that Shawn Michaels will be there next week, which I'm sure you're thrilled about.
Yeah, great. Super excited for his return to San Antonio, Texas.
So anyway... they talk about, you know, getting a different reception in Canada, and Austin basically doesn't care. And he says, Vince asks him, you know, who his partner is going to be next week. And he was like, you ask and ask, just like a jackass. he knows if he doesn't pick a partner that Gorilla Monsoon is going to pick one for him. And he says, about time too, because Monsoon has the exercise in 30 years. Oh, he's so good. He said he's happy to hold both tag team titles by himself. And then he said since Brett made an ultimatum you know, to win the title at SummerSlam, his ultimatum for Owen Hart is that if Owen can pull down his tights and Austin will get on his knees and kiss Owen's ass, he will kiss his ass if he can't kick it at SummerSlam.
I liked that line. That was really good.
And Steve Austin, just like a boss.
Yeah, so I mean, he's adding a stipulation. He's like, you put that in the contract. I will kiss his ass if I can't kick it. And that's just kind of funny, right? Because, like, I wish that I didn't know what happens at SummerSlam because I would be super, super intrigued by Steve Austin versus Owen Hart. Like, super intrigued.
Do you know what? One of the things about this, it's just this as an example segment, and I think it's just one of the things that if we had it today, it would be so much better. It's just, like, just letting guys cut promos in the way they want to.
Yeah.
I don't get the sense that Austin is in any way scripted here.
Oh no, not at all. It's absolutely Austin, right? And I mean, Vince, even when he opens up the interview and he talks about Austin getting handcuffed last night, you know, Austin's like, "You can put my arms behind my back, but you can't shut up the fingers," and just like all these one-liners that he comes up with are so good, and he's just so excellent at what he does. And I think scripting and overscripting performers. I think we've seen it with Mankind, actually. That's one of the interesting examples, is that when you hear Mankind do his promos on Retro Raw, and when you hear, you know, Mick Foley doing Mick Foley promos, he's really, really good. And I think some of the times, like when he was the GM of Raw recently, you could tell that he was scripted, and you could tell that he was having to follow a script and try to remember lines, and it just didn't seem as authentic and it didn't seem as compelling. And I think when guys who are good at speaking are allowed to just speak and go out and do what they do, it makes everything a lot more compelling because it feels more authentic.
Yeah, and I think that's something that they really hopefully will learn, you know, to do nowadays, because it's funny because when we watch back on Retro Raw, I think one of the things that's always interesting is there's things that I love, and I sometimes feel that you watch it and kind of go, I can tell you don't get it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't resonate. And I think a lot of it's got to do with the fact that the wrestling now is so much better than it was then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's miles ahead. Whereas on the other hand, it's like sometimes you go, oh wow, like this has been an ongoing story for like 9 weeks, and every week it's followed up and every week it's interesting that the characters stick to the story or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And I think the intertwining stories are really good. I think we see some of that nowadays. Like every once in a while, they'll hit on something where stories will intertwine the way that they did on Retro Raw. But I think they definitely had more of an organic storytelling in 1997 than they do now. But the wrestling isn't nearly as good. And sometimes the stories are good, but I don't know if they like can carry it so that I'm as compelled as I want to be, maybe.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And the Attitude Era is probably not going to make that any better for you, to be honest. But main event time is Goldust versus Bret Hart. We get Goldust cut up promo backstage where, like, I feel like he regressed as a character in the promo.
Well, this promo was just nothing. It was basically just like,
but he did what he used to do.
Final curtain call.
Like, the whole thing that we've had is that Goldust is now a family man with Marlena.
Where was Marlena tonight, by the way, and last night?
No idea. But my question is that, like, here, he just seemed a bit like the old kind of, like, sexually aggressive Goldust who's just being a bit, like, you know, weird to the camera.
Yeah, he makes movie references and, like, eye fucks the camera and tells Bret it will be his final curtain call. It was not new Goldust at all.
Nope, not at all. So, main event with Bret Hart and Goldust, it only went about 10 minutes or so, just under it. But basically, every single person comes out. Like, for whatever reason, the DO... Sandra, explain
DOA
to me why
come
DOA...
out first. I have no idea why DOA came out here. No idea whatsoever. I was baffled. I was like, well, there are motorcycles. That's cool, I guess. I didn't think that DOA and, like, Los Pericos, Nation of Domination, I thought that they all were just sort of sectioned off in their own little corner of the world, and they would only fight each other forever until the end of time, because that's kind of what I'm getting from all of the Nation of Domination-related shenanigans, is that they just fight each other forever until the end of time. But, yeah, for some reason, DOA come out on their motorcycles, Legion of Doom and Ken Shamrock come out at one point, and they say maybe to try to help Goldust or something, since they were teammates last night, so now they can maybe be teammates again, and the Hart Foundation's out there, Steve Austin's at the top of the ramp just watching things happen. Like, I don't know why everyone was out here for Bret Hart versus Goldust. It's not like Bret Hart versus Goldust was this big epic match that everyone cared about. It was Bret Hart versus Goldust. Like,
yeah, it was an odd one. But the thing that was interesting to me is, so DOA come out, which makes no fucking sense in the world, right?
No.
They just stand there. Here's my theory. I think that somebody backstage was like, fucking hell, they love DOA, just send them out.
They just might have done.
And then the Hart Foundation come out because obviously they're like, what are the fucking bikers doing out there? So they
gotta
come
protect
out.
Their boy Bret.
Of course. And then Ken Shamrock and LOD come out. Don't really know why LOD are out there. That's the one that's confusing me. Anyway.
I think the only reason LOD and Ken Shamrock were out there was just because they were teammates with Goldust last night, and they thought that maybe Goldust needed backup because the whole Hart Foundation was out there.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. But yeah, it didn't click for me with all that. But
I liked the shenanigans, though. It made no sense at all, but I was just kind of like, I like the chaos of it. I mean, it made Bret Hart versus Goldust a lot more interesting than Bret Hart versus Goldust would have been.
I liked the shenanigans. It's just LOD I didn't understand. Because I was like, okay, Shamrock's out there because he's in the thing with...
LOD made more sense than DOA.
Hey, they've got bikes.
Well, yeah, but why are they even involved with any of the
I don't know.
Performers, don't know. They're just not. Like.
But in the end, Bret hits a sunset flip, basically kind of redoing the SummerSlam 92 finish. Although Goldust in his weird gear couldn't get his legs high up enough for Bret to grip him. So Bret has to like grip his hand back to put... Anyway, so he gets the win. Heart Foundation are victorious, basking in the Canadian glory that they have. And that's it. And next week, we're going to get Owen and Davey going up against Stone Cold Steve Austin, a partner of his choosing. Shawn Michaels returns in San Antonio. And Vince McMahon closes with quite a nice line where he says, "We'll see you next week, deep in the heart of Texas."
Yeah, which will be interesting because the reactions are going to be very different. And I think it's interesting that they're going from Alberta, which is, you know, prime Heart Foundation territory, to Texas, which is not just America, but prime Steve Austin territory, right? Because he's actually from Texas. So I think the dynamic there is going to be interesting. And having Sean come back will be also intriguing to see how that goes.
So the question becomes, Sondra, where is your thumb for the July 7th, 1997 episode of Monday Night Raw from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada in the Northlands Coliseum?
Thumbs in the middle, I think. Middling to up. It was fine. Like, it was fun enough. Nothing was, like, terrible except for Eric Shelley versus Brian Christopher. But some of the pacing of it just didn't make a lot of sense. But I guess I'm pretty into the Steve Austin Mankind stuff, and I like all the Heart Foundation shenanigans. Bret's promo was really good. I just think it was a little long-winded, maybe. I'm not super sure what a lot of the stuff on the show accomplished, but it was fine.
Cool. So thumbs up for me. I thought the Bret promo at the beginning was great with the Austin interference. I liked another Sasuke Michinoku match. For whatever reason, DOA and the Briquas was fun because it was really short. I like Owen and Davey getting the victory by like the really naff count out. It made me laugh. The Austin and Hunter was fun with the Mankind stuff, and Bret Goldust was good with shenanigans. My only real bit of the show that I was kind of like, was Brian Christopher and Eric Shelley. So thumbs up for me. We'll be back next week with the July 14th episode. And I think that's it, Sandra. I know it's a shorter episode this week, but in the interest of full disclosure, I recorded a 90-minute Great Balls of Fire review, but straight into Canadian Stampede review, and have just done this. And I'm really hungry. I want to have some dinner. So I sped through this a little bit more quick. So, but we'll be back to like sort of our regular pacing. I fly to Vancouver on Friday, so I'm hopefully going to be able to coordinate with Sondra to record either on Thursday before I go or Friday when I get there. So
we'll have retro. We'll work something out, I'm sure.
We will. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week. Enjoy the wrestling, and we'll speak to you soon.
We didn't plug Twitter or Patreon.
Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear the Canadian Stampede review that Kenny and I just recorded, a $5 pledge on Patreon will get you there. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Also up at the $3 level is the Great Balls of Fire review that Kenny and David did. Lots of other bonus content. Stuff's going up all the time. So check us out over there.
Bye.
Bye.